Okay, we're back for episode 97 of Powers and Principalities. I think that's correct, 97, right? I never check.
It's correct. you don't need to because your memory is a steel trap, Jim. You're absolutely right, 97.
So tonight we agreed to talk about, this idea of socialized medicine, government or government health care, relying the state on for your health care needs, medical needs, overall health. Is that a good idea? Is it necessary? Has the market failed? Do we have a free market? Well, socialized medicine, I pulled this from various sources from the internet. Socialized medicine is a term used in the United States to describe and discuss systems of universal health care, medical and hospital care, for all by means of government regulation of healthcare and subsidies derived from taxation. Because of historically negative associations with socialism in American culture, the term is usually used pejoratively in the American political discourse. The term was first widely used in the United States by advocates of the American Medical Association in opposition to President Harry S. Truman's 1947 healthcare initiative. The original meaning was confined to systems in which the government operates healthcare facilities and employs healthcare professionals. This narrow usage would apply to the British National Health Service, hospital trust, and health systems that operate in other countries as diverse as Finland, Spain, Israel, and Cuba. The United States Veterans Health Administration and the medical departments of the U.S. Army, Navy, and Air Force would fall under this narrow definition. When used in that way, the narrow definition permits a clear distinction from single-payer health insurance systems in which the government finances health care but is not involved in care delivery. More recently, American conservative critics of health care reform have attempted to broaden the term by applying it to any publicly funded system. Canada's Medicare system and most of the UK's NHS, general practitioner and dental services, which are systems where healthcare is delivered by private business with partial or total government funding, fit the broader definition, as do the healthcare systems of most of Western Europe. In the United States, Medicare, Medicaid, and U.S. military's TRICARE fall under that definition. In specific regard to military benefits of current volunteer military, such care is an owed benefit to a specific group as part of an economic exchange, which muddies the definition yet further. Most industrialized countries and many developing countries operate some form of publicly funded health care with the universal coverage as the goal. According to the Institute of Medicine and others, the United States is the only wealthy industrialized nation that does not provide universal health care. Shame on us, I guess. Universal health care and the National Health Insurance were first proposed by U.S. President Theodore Roosevelt. President Franklin D. Roosevelt, his cousin, later championed it, as did Harry S. Truman as part of the Fair Deal and many others. Truman announced before describing his proposal that this is not socialized medicine. Okay. Government involvement in healthcare was ardently opposed by the American Medical Association, which distributed posters to doctors with slogans such as socialized medicine, which will undermine the democratic form of government. The term socialized medicine was popularized by public relations firm Whitaker and Baxter, working for the AMA in 1947, to disparage President Truman's proposal for a national healthcare system. It was a label at the dawn of the Cold War meant to suggest that anybody advocating universal health care must be a communist. The AMA conducted a nationwide campaign called Operation Coffee Cup during the late 1950s and early 1960s in opposition to the Democrats' plan to extend Social Security to include health insurance for the elderly, later known as Medicare. As part of the plan, the doctors' wives would organize coffee meetings in an attempt to convince acquaintances to write letters to Congress opposing the program. In 1961, Ronald Reagan recorded a disc entitled Ronald Reagan Speaks Out Against Socialized Medicine, warning its audience that the dangers that socialized medicine could bring. The recording was widely played at Operation Coffee Cup meetings. Other pressure groups began to extend the definition from state-managed health care to any form of state-financed health care. President Dwight Eisenhower opposed plans to expand government role in health care during his time in office. A 2008 poll indicates that Americans are sharply divided when asked about their views of the expression of socialized medicine, with a larger percentage of Democrats holding favorable views, while a larger percentage of Republicans holding unfavorable views. The Veterans Health Administration, the Military Health System, and the Indian Health Service are examples of socialized medicine in the stricter sense of government-administered care, but they are for limited populations. Medicare and Medicaid are forms of publicly funded health care, which fit the looser definition of socialized medicine. Part B coverage, Medi-Cal, requires a monthly premium of $96.40 and possibly higher. And the first $135 of cost per year also fall to the senior, not the government. A poll released in February 2008, conducted by the Harvard School of Public Health and Harris Interactive, indicated that Americans are currently divided in their opinions of socialized medicine, and this split correlates strongly with their political party affiliations. Well, that's kind of a big run of the history of the debate, I guess. Of course, Medicare was passed, and Medicaid was passed in the 1960s, an extension of Social Security insurance. So although we have a hybrid system in the United States where there is some private health care mixed in with government, it's heavily influenced by insurance, third-party reimbursement. So we really don't have a pure system to compare it against. All systems are somewhat mixed. But there a lot of that debate misses essential questions about health care. Not only is who should pay for it, how it should be paid, the dependence on the state by the individual, does that fundamentally change the relationship between the individual who's supposed to be free with the state, subjected to bureaucracy and deprived the influence of competition, you know, the benefit of competition and market choice in these things? How will it affect innovation in Medicare? In medical care? What is medicine? Obviously, how do you innovate under a bureaucratic socialized system? There's problems with that. But also, it doesn't address the issue of medical care, health care. What does it need? What does it really mean? Is it allopathic? Is it this Rockefeller medicine system that we've inherited since the middle of the 20th century or the early 20th century? Healthcare, does it involve things like how we exercise, how we live our lives, diet, our sedentary lifestyles? What type of lifestyle are we leading in our lives? So this is all factors into healthcare. And also, this the broader issue is if we do subject ourselves to a socialized system, again, we become subjected to bureaucratic edict rules of fiat. We're under more regulation, more monitoring. If the government indeed is paying for healthcare, then it has a claim in how we lead our lives. So once obviously, if government's paying for how to treat our healthcare, it might presume the right to tell us what we eat, how much we exercise, what we do with our lives. These are important questions that many people seem to ignore. They just want to say, well, they'll think of a hard case and say someone's sick. Well, someone should pay for their health care. Well, people shouldn't be burdened with health care. They have a right to health care. They have a right to education and these things. Health care is too important to leave to the vicissitudes of the marketplace. However, we do rely on generally our food, our clothing, our shelter for the free market. And that's at least immediately more important than health care, because without all those, we die of either exposure or starvation. Yet the market seems to do a pretty good job in supplying those things. And leaving up to charity to deal with the outliers, the people who are generally indigent. And if you do provide a right to these things, you tend to encourage the notion of being an indigent. You assume everyone needs something. Everyone's indigent. They can't take care of themselves. So it creates dependency. So these are all problems with socialized medicine. No one seems to really think it through philosophically or also practically. And also the experience of current existing social systems aren't exactly encouraging. Nevertheless, although they're rife with problems because people depend on them, it creates a constituency to these programs which make it sort of invulnerable to reform or getting rid of if indeed they're determined that they're actually causing problems and they're not achieving what they're doing. You can do better with a freer system. So that's my initial take on it. So, Joe, where do you want to go with this?
Oh, God. I'm in danger of... being seen as a curmudgeon, Tim, by I think some of the people who listen to us, because my take on socialized medicine is I feel the same way about it in the United States as I do as free market medicine. Mm-hmm. Both just whirling cesspools that basically, if you turn them loose, will shorten your life and make you miserable. Here's medicine. Medicine is like putting stitches in wounds and knitting bones. And what I would suggest people do is just learn how to do that yourself. Because 100% of the chemicals are nonsense, in my opinion. They're just absolute rubbish. So this access to medicine is, to me, basically we have fiat currency. We also have fiat medicine. Fiat medicine goes hand in hand with the fiat currency, which is, you know, reflective of the fiat free market. It's all just complete faith. These are religious systems. Thinking that the doctor has something to offer is, I'll just give a little statistic to, you know, kind of underline my perspective. It's like in 1950, like non-smokers were, I think it was like 900 out of 100,000 died of cancer, and people who smoked was like 1,200 out of 100,000 died. And so that was what, like 70 years ago. And since then, though, look at the great advances we've made, right? I mean, you have access to MRI and then radiation, followed by chemo, followed by surgery, and maybe even some stem cell therapy thrown in. And it's all at the tune of around $800,000. And yet the statistics haven't budged a single iota. In other words, it's still like around 900 for non-smokers and 1,200 for smokers. And I'll just say something. So there's like 10,000 times more medicine being applied, which means that 100% of the medicine is nonsense. It just is completely a fiat system. But it's worse. And this is why I think you should learn to like to knit your own bones and to, you know, do your own stitches. Because I had a friend a couple years ago, and he was basically without any family, and he had cancer. So he lived with us for about 6 months, and right up to the time when he was going to die. And he'd had chemo and radiation. And the fact is, he had what was called chemo brain. I don't know if you ever heard of the expression, but basically he would come into a room and couldn't remember why he came into the room. His mind was just shot. So my take on socialized medicine is that it is a fiat system that detracts from the quality of life. The more you participate in the chemical system, the worse off you're going to be. As you well know, Tim, we were kind of approaching a more or had some wisdom in terms of promotion of the immune system and natural cures back in the 19th century. But then the Rockefellers came in and literally just bought everything up. And then they said, well, it's going to be petrochemicals from here on out. And so that was clearly a malevolent act, right? I mean, you know, they were trying to make anybody healthier with this, right? I mean, isn't that clear? I don't have to like argue this point. They were greedy and evil, and so they flipped the medical system to what you call like Rockefeller medicine. Yeah. So, you know, recently a family member was in the hospital 2.5 weeks. I don't know if you'd call it socialized medicine or free market medicine, but her bill was like around $600,000.
For 2.5 weeks.
2.5 weeks, yeah. And so that's pretty expensive. And
she's all better now, right?
No, of course not. I think she's suffering now from the effects of some of the chemicals they gave her. It's a very difficult situation, difficult family situation. I'm not even sure I should get into it, you know, but it's just one of these things because there's so many children that there's no clear path to take in terms of this. And basically the hospital, they're on a system of invoice generation, which is also the system that is promoted by not being sued. So basically the way it works is, as best I can tell, is the lawyers give the doctors the permission to create the most insane and crazy invoices because they will say that they will sue if one little thing is left out. You see what I mean? It's a perfect and tit for tat kind of deal where the lawyers will always sue and the doctors will always ratchet up the, you know, the so-called medicine to not be sued. And so the invoices just keep getting bigger and bigger. But you see, the fact is, the way the system works, it's worked through insurance. People, when they come into hospitals under, you know, under the so-called free enterprise, whatever you want to call it in the United States, they don't end up paying the bill or very little of it. Some people do, but those are poor people.
Yeah.
The people with money, they have these insurance policies, and the insurance just picks up everything. I mean, seriously, there you just have to be wealthy and paying a big premium, and you get you know, first class meals in a private room, and they hook you up to five tubes, right? There's a computer that sits there and gives out readouts of your blood pressure, your heart rate, oxygen in the blood. I mean, and it'll also play, you know, CNN if the patient. So it's a very high tech, glossy kind of thing. But I mean, when you just walk around, you can see that no one's getting any, you know, no one is basically, you know, getting healthier from this thing. So, you know, I'm sorry to be long-winded, but I would just say that the dialectic of free market versus socialized medicine, to me, this is like, you know, the dialectic between, you know, socialism and free enterprise. It's just, it is irrelevant to the real problem, which is who is controlling the both systems.
Yeah.
And so that's the thing with medicine, is that, you know, you can have Obamacare, and, you know, you may not have access to, like, all of the fancy systems in the hospital, but that's not a bad thing, really. I don't think you're going to get anything worse done to your body than someone who's at the very top of the insurance chain and who's right down the hall, because these things are mixed, you know. You have, like, the Obamacare people, and just down the hall is, you know, Chubb Blue Star insurance people in the free enterprise. And, you know, I don't think there's that much difference.
Well, no, I mean, obviously the Obamacare, the Patient Affordable Care Act, was written by the insurance industry. I think it was Elizabeth Fowler was her name, who was the vice president for WellPoint for public relations, which is really marketing, lobbying. And she's actually one that wrote the bill that became Obamacare. And it was a big, you know, obviously a big subsidy, because it mandated people get insurance. And not only did it mandate people get insurance, it actually mandated a certain level of coverage. So people's premiums, you know, went up two, three times, you know. You can't get, you know, a bare bones catastrophic plan. You have to buy a gold plated plan and pay for people's abortions and contraceptives. You know, it's ridiculous. You know, obviously, even within the confines of conventional medicine, insurance should only be there for catastrophic incidences. You know, not things like childbirth or day to day stuff that you should pay for out of pocket. But again, you alluded to it, is this third party reimbursement system where no one pays for it directly, so there's no equilibrium. So it goes up and up and up, and the insurance system itself is designed as sort of a harvesting or extraction, where everyone pays for it indirectly. So everyone pays for it often through it's employer based, so they're stuck to a job. They worry about losing their health care. I mean, I don't know, you know, the biggest thing about getting a job is getting health care. Getting health care, the presumption is you're always going to be sick or something, which is ridiculous. And that, you know, that maybe speaks to another issue about lifestyle in America, the food we eat. You know, food in America makes you obese. You know, people have commented when they travel to Europe and they just eat normal food for a couple of months that they lose 15 pounds, not doing anything else out of this. That's eating, getting away from American food. That shows you how poisonous American food is. I would say that free market or private healthcare is far more efficient, far better than poisoning you than socialized medicine. Whereas in socialized medicine, you might just die from other things like neglect or other aspects of living in such a society, because that obviously those societies still have other problems with lifestyle and stuff like that. But you're right. From a delivery system, yes, it's more efficient in giving you the poisons that they call
medicine. Yeah, I mean, the thing is that there are some rare things, like what if you're in a car accident?
Yeah, trauma surgery, stuff like that. Yeah.
Brain problems, you know, and then I think it's what I call mechanical medicine. They're good at it. They can knit bones. They can, you know, do sutures. And I think under some circumstances, they would even, like, I would let them at my brain. But
well, some of the heart surgery, some of the things they've come up with, you know.
I think the bypass is nonsense, but I'm, you know, a skeptic. But, like, I wouldn't do one if I had that kind of condition. I would go the other side. I would try to do exercise and, you know, and diet and see if that could work. So I just think that, you know, but that is kind of a marginal thing. I mean, like the bypass, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's sort of mechanical, but it's also sort of whiz-bang technology. And they always throw in a ton of chemicals when they do the operation. So, you know, I would stay away from it. But you know, the I was I've actually used socialized medicine a number of times. I've been sick and went to the hospital, not to see a doctor in Indonesia and in New Zealand. And in Britain, my wife was bitten by a dog. So there we had three examples. And you know, we were foreigners, and it was one of those things where you just go in, and it was, you know, I mean, it seemed like normal medical care to me. And I mean, maybe because we were tourists, I guess maybe they treat us better. But the medical system that I really liked was the one in Cuba. And in Cuba, I actually spent a couple of days with a woman doctor in her practice. I was very interested in it. And her, I you know, because the Cuban doctors are highly trained. They rent them out. The Cuban government rents them out for a fee to try to recoup, you know, to try to get some cash into the country, basically. But many of them stay. And like this woman, she was born in this area. She had 1,500 patients, and she had three assistants. And I asked her about, well, what, you know, kind of, I could see what it was like, what do you do? Like, do you give high blood pressure pills? And she goes, no, you know, we're dead broke here in Cuba. We have no money.
Can't
So I
afford
said,
medicine.
well, what do they come in for? She goes, well, you know, mainly weight. And I, you know, and I said, well, what would you do? And I mean, do you have pills? She goes, no, we have no money. She goes, yeah, didn't you hear me? We don't have anything. She goes, if someone's really sick, she can kick them upstairs to a hospital. And there they, if, in some cases, they would pay for drugs and stuff. But down here at the street level, it was just the woman doctor. She had pictures of Che on her wall. And I said, so what do you do? And she goes, well, you know, she says, everyone comes in once a year. They can come in once a year. It doesn't cost anything. I give them like an inspection. And she says, the main thing I look for is weight. And if I see someone putting on weight, I just go to the bakeries right here and tell them to stop feeding the fat pig. And I mean, seriously, she said,
It
this is what
works.
I do. And she goes, yeah. And they just shame them to like get a little better shape. And so Cuba, even though they have no money, and really they have just, when I was there, it was like 4 years ago, because they had nothing. They had like the average wage of $25. You know, I mean, it was just really impoverished in terms of cash. But they had much better health. You see what I mean? I mean, you walk around, look at the Cubans. There are no fat Cubans. The Cubans are athletic, you know. They look like they're mambo dancers, you know.
Yeah, so.
And the food, there isn't a lot of it, you know. So it's just their diet seems, whatever it is, their health is better. So health is a part of the whole function. It fits into the social structure and everything else. And Americans are really sick, and it's not because we don't have enough socialized medicine. It's not because we don't have enough free market insurance medicine. It's because the system is screwed, and it just makes us sick. And the health system is just, in my opinion, just it's part of the camouflage.
Well,
And
yeah, people become reliant on it, and I mean, it subsidizes hypochondria.
yeah.
The idea that it was a time just because you were elderly doesn't mean you went to the doctor all the time. And also the enfeebleness that people are experiencing is also part of a cumulative effect of an unhealthy lifestyle, where as a prior generation just wasn't quite, it wasn't ubiquitous. It was just, you got old and you ached it a little bit, but you weren't constantly going to the doctor. And that changed with Medicare.
Yeah.
Obviously, because if you make it free, you're going to increase demand in these things. And for a while, the AMA opposed it, but now, then they embraced it because it was a cash cow for them for the longest time. In fact, I mean, want talk about the finances behind it. Was I think by 1990, they were spending 7.5 times more than they had projected on it. I mean, that's how bad the actuaries were on it.
Well, it's because everyone is just stealing from it right
Yeah,
and
the
left.
fraud is
And
just rampant. Yeah.
yeah, well, since the whole thing is fraud,
Yeah.
and I, you know, Tim, I don't want to be exaggerating. The whole thing is not fraud. I think there's like 1% of it that may be legitimate medicine,
Be
but that
generous.
would be the top. I'm telling you, it would be the top. 99% is just absolute fraud. The people would be better off without going in and wasting their time with the chemicals and talking to the doctor and getting prescriptions. Just stay out of that. This is absurd. So it's...
I mean, it's interesting, like in Cuba, you know, where they're too poor to have drugs.
Yeah.
Advanced medicine. And there was a time when you told me that. I said, well, it's because it's socialist and you can't run a socialist economy and expect to have any resources to provide adequate or modern health care. Well, what either in whether you know, intended or not, has actually saved the Cuban people from Rockefeller medicine.
Yeah, no, I'm telling you, it's absolutely true. The Cubans are much healthier. I mean, in Miami, you see nothing but fat slobs, you know, walking around and passing out drunk.
Mm-hmm.
You get to Havana, it's sober, it's like athletic. And everyone is hustling for like $2, you know. And also the idea, I'm just as an aside, that Cuba is communist. They're too poor to be communist. Every single house has got some scam. I mean, like beauty salons, music, restaurants, car fabrication. They're all fighting over $10, but mm-hmm. they're all fighting because they have no money. So it's just a failed social system. For a lot of reasons, but the medical thing, because they avoided the Rockefeller medicine, their health is good. Health is very admirable. So getting back to like the socialized medicine, I mean, you know, think about what it really has to offer. And I had a little aside. I had talked to a friend of mine, you know, because I was doing research for our discussion, and I was talking to a friend of mine who's a doctor, right? And I said, well, Obamacare, like, what was this designed for? And he goes, okay, well, let me explain Obamacare to you. He says, so basically what they did was, is they looked through the procedures the insurance companies did to figure out which ones they could make money on and which ones were losers. And so that was how they determined what would be eligible for Obamacare. He goes, the whole thing is basically a way for the insurance companies to work with the system and exclude and push out to the government all of the stuff that they don't want to be involved with. And then the other side of it, you know, people who have their insurance policies, they, all of those procedures, the ones that they, that somehow the insurance companies are, they want to write those policies because they know they're cash cows for them. He says, that's what Obamacare is. It's just a completely fiat system where you're believing that something is inspired by, you know, beneficial concepts, right?
Yeah.
But it's just 100% malevolent. You know?
Well, I mean, the whole thing's been commercialized and financialized to the point. I mean, obviously, nothing wrong with paying a physician or a specialist to come in and deal with your ailment and make you better for their service because their time is worth money. They have to devote time and resources to the art that they're practicing, and they should be compensated. But what we've... Medicine now, modern medicine, is big business. It's as big as, you know, as the oil industry or high tech or even military industrial complex. You have the medical industrial complex and these huge hospitals and infrastructure and capital investment and machinery. All this has to be paid for and has to produce profit, and people are invested in this. In fact, I'm sure people's 401k are invested in companies that own these huge, you know, these corporations that run the healthcare system, and they got to pay out, you know, they got to pay the bonds or pay out the dividends and these things, so they got to produce profit. And there's no profit if people aren't sick. So, I mean, it's one of these, so they're not going to prescribe, not medicine, but just prescribe the lifestyle changes that would be necessary to improve people's lives. A good example is they simply got people to drink, you know, if they ate more of fresh vegetables and stopped drinking corn syrup and, you know, laced soft drinks.
Aspartame, glyphosate, you know, down the hatch.
Yeah, and the FDA promoting glyphosate and or approving it and aspartame and these things. The various institutions that we think are there to protect our health and protect health and maintain quality and approve drugs that are beneficial and not harmful, they've approved the very things we know are harmful, like aspartame.
Of course. I mean, the whole thing is just preposterous. It's like you when you said, well, you know, we should like pay for the doctor because they come in and they make you better. So, okay, well, that's like an interesting concept. But the reality is what happens, the doctor comes in and he can't do anything. What can the doctor do? They give you drugs?
Yeah.
What is he going to do for the immune system?
The drugs hide the symptoms. So.
Right. Yeah, he's gonna give you opium or something. But so basically, the doctor will come in and give you an escalating scale of narcotics and, you know, I mean, who knows what, you know, Prozac, God knows. They give just drug after drug. And then at the end of it, he prescribes hospice.
Well, what they decided.
That's it.
Yeah, they learned this long ago that, you know, from oil, petroleum, they could synthesize certain chemicals that mimicked the things that they could get from plants, right? I think this is the birth of the pharmaceutical industry. And it would have a chemical reaction in the body. It would suppress some symptoms and create others. And the other symptoms would be a reason to produce another drug.
Absolutely.
You know, and so on and so on and so on. So that, you know, then you have one drug taking the drug to counteract the effects of one drug, and you lose sight of it. And, you know.
But Tim, like, what, like, so they have one drug, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, so you got a drug. So it's a blood thinner or some kind of like statin drug, right?
Yeah.
Just a crazy, crazy drug. But they got it. Okay, here's your statin drug. But you're also going to need to take a blood thinner, and your blood pressure looks a lot high because the statin drug tends to. Okay, so we're going to give you a blood pressure. So like my friend, okay, this is a true story, absolutely true story. So my friend was taking five drugs, and he wasn't feeling good. And I go, well, Bob, you know, you're taking all these drugs. And he goes, yeah, but, you know, doctor, he's a big AMA guy. I said, yeah, but Bob, here's the point. No one has ever done a study of the five drugs in combination, right? So this just shows the malevolence in and of itself. You are a human petri dish for these five drugs. You're taking these drugs and you feel terrible. And so you should stop taking the damn drugs and see if you get better, because you're sick because you're taking all the drugs. And he goes, you know, I don't want. And so he kept taking the drugs, and sure enough, his brain started to foam. I'm not kidding. His brain started to foam. So he had to go to the hospital and have holes drilled in his forehead to get the foam out. Okay, it's a true story. Foaming brain, and they had to open. And he has holes in his forehead to get the foam out. So a month later, I see him. He's out of the hospital. I go, Bob, well, you know, I don't mean to I told you so, but I hope now you're off the drugs. He goes, Joe, what are you talking about? I have all of my old drugs and my new anti-brain foaming drug.
Anti-fame.
Yeah. So I go, well, I guess you're in great shape. We took my mom to a doctor, and she was supposed to bring all of the drugs that she was taking, and it was nine drugs. She was taking nine drugs. And I was at the doctor. Well, I forget what it was, because they were going to give her L-DOPA, you know, she had slight Parkinson's. So they wanted to check the other drugs. So they did a composite search of like the pharmacy. Somehow they could look, and they found that there was even another drug that she'd forgotten about. She was taking 10 drugs. And it's just, this is criminal. This is absolutely criminal, in my opinion. I mean, this is the triumph of the Rockefeller medicine, which was not designed to make us well. It's designed to make us weak and stupid. And when you're on 10 drugs, I just have to believe that anyone under any circumstances, if you're at two or three of these narcotics and or whatever they are, chemicals, you have to be suffering, you know, mentally. And so socialized medicine, Tim, you know, it's interesting. It's kind of like mind control, where people are fighting for the right to be made sick. You know, they're fighting for the right. We have to have socialized medicine. What they really should be doing is like revisiting what medicine is and what health is.
Yeah, reevaluating the whole thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Would that be a holistic approach?
Yeah, that's what
that
I
that word.
Yeah, it's the 1% of the medicine that, I mean, like, you know, you get brain injury. Okay, I can imagine there's some expertise there. Some guy would know how to, like, you know, take a bullet out or something. You know, okay, cool. I'll pay for that. But this is not even 1% of the total, you know, medicine, that so-called medicine that goes on. And that stuff, the mechanical medicine, the bones, knitting, the sutures for the cuts, and pulling the bullet out of the brain, That should all be, I think, more localized. I'd like to see families organize around this and get maybe someone who knows how to do it and just have that as a skill. Because really, if in any time when the government is involved with this, and as you and I would just say that the Rockefeller medicine works both sides of the street. It's obviously in the government medicine, socialized, okay, but it's also in the insurance medicine too. That's just the high-paying aspect of the Rockefeller medicine system, and it's just nothing but drugs and radiation and chemo. It's just there's just fancier rooms, but they're both completely, destructive to overall health. And so, I think it would be a good idea for the struggle, like particularly when the Obamacare struggle. Remember, it was like, this fake dialectic that was making us believe there was real democracy, The Obamacare should have been a good moment for people to say, let's just completely drop out of the medical system completely. Let's find maybe get work with some person who's young and who can get an MD skill, but just mechanical medicine, and then work on our immune systems. And that is get rid of toxicity, get the right kind of food, and let's take that approach to overall, community health.
Yeah, that would be require things to obviously worrying about our diet, our environment, what's in the water. And that gets into things like fluoridated water. I mean, when you talk about healthcare, you really have to take a holistic approach because you have to take into account not only what we're consuming, what we're exposed to, the chemicals, big agriculture and these things, food. Consider food as a form of medicine. I know they're not supposed to do that. Consider food as medicine, meaning, but how can what we eat not factor into our health? That's basic. It's 101 to me. And but I mean, one thing we have to realize, and you alluded to it, is that there's malevolence afoot here. It's profiteering, it's extraction, also malevolence. There's a I wish I had the citation here, but I'll read it. It's article: Western medicine is Rockefeller medicine all the way. Western medicine has some good points for sure, and is great in an emergency, but it's high time people realized that today's mainstream medicine, Western medicine or allopathy, with its focus on drugs, radiation, and surgery, is at its foundation a Rockefeller creation. The Rockefellers, of course, are not, or I'm sorry, are one of the most rich and powerful families of the elite black nobility. Behind their spurious facade of philanthropy, they are power-hungry tyrants intent on owning the entire world and depopulating it through eugenics-based programs like forced sterilization, water fluoridation, abortions, and vaccinations. They have either majorly or fully created and still dominate the United Nations, the World Health Organization, the Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, Planned Parenthood, many other organizations that either rule the world or influence culture to a large extent. So when you look at medicine and you take into account the malevolence of those who created modern medicine, the Rockefellers and other interested parties, just to say that, why would you want it under a free market system, so to speak, or a socialized system?
Doesn't matter
It doesn't matter.
if they're both fiat system, Tim.
It's like the Cold War, communism versus capitalism, right?
Exactly. It's like which version of Freemasonic crypto slave system do you want to live in? It's like, well, I don't know. I guess over here with the discos, but it's like it's funny because like when I was fascinated by this topic, socialized medicine, and I was trying to well, do I have anything really I want to express about it? And I started thinking that, the best, in my opinion, to get to my understanding of it, if I could communicate that to someone, it would be to study how the Rockefellers took over the oil industry. That would be my this I understand the medicine with your choice today. Look at how the Rockefellers worked with the Harrimans, right? Got this a mysterious funding source.
Yeah, the railroads and the banks, yeah.
Right. Well, the way it worked was is that they got the cheaper rate on all freight, and this was completely illegal and arbitrary. And it was because the Harrimans decided to give Rockefeller the monopoly. But remember, the Harrimans were just a proxy for the Rothschilds and the Schiffs. I mean, they were just that aspect of the Jewish banking cartel. And so the Rockefellers got chosen for some reason, you know, go figure, that this would be the guy that we would create the monopoly around. And so they absolutely destroyed all of the legitimate competition that would have, like, who knows what that would have, you know, what kind of, how different the United States would have been if there had been real competition in the oil industry. But, you know, spilt milk under the bridge, let's not worry about that. But the fact is, this is what, you know, when you go in and you have the guy with the white schmock and, you know, he's like analyzing, you know, like what drugs to give you, you got to remember that that guy is really, no matter how, you know, you can slice it different ways, I know, but he's really just an agent of these guys who were criminals back, you know, in the 19th century who took over the oil industry and then went out. Rockefeller, when the first thing that they did with the big money was to destroy all of the health systems in the United States that worked.
Yeah, that was Abraham Flexner, yeah.
That was the first thing that they did. They funded all of these takeovers of the different universities so they could get rid of people who are promoting, you know, health through nutrition.
Yeah, they called it efficient philanthropy.
Yeah, it was very efficient. Yeah. So that's the thing is that, and then now, instead of seeing the malevolence that we've been subjected to, we get to see the dialectic of socialized or free enterprise access to the Rockefeller, you know, death trap.
Yeah, and it's funny because you talk about how they do this. It was very strategic and very, well, rational and thought out. It was, you know, just something that someone like a Rockefeller would do. Same way he took over the oil industry, the developing petroleum industry, the General Education Board, you know, strategic efficient philanthropy, where I think it was like $130 million, which is a huge amount of cash back then. How they used this to influence education and culture and even, you know, the professional trades like medicine. And the whole idea, even entertainment, because obviously, first with the soap operas and then with television and movies, how Rockefeller medicine was promoted. You know,
yeah.
The hero doctor, Dr. Mark, you know, whether it's, what was it?
There.
Marcus Welby, MD, Medical Center, these ER later on in the 90s, and even the show, you know, even today's medical shows, you know, promote, of course, the Rockefeller, the allopathic doctor, the heroic physician who comes in and intervenes and pokes, prods, cuts, and poisons and saves the patient. The miracle, the, you know, quality of the miracle drug, right?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So that's the thing, is they took over the medical system with the idea of basically the Brave New World. You know, it's just they were thinking long-term, and they wanted to basically create a completely impotent citizen that couldn't rebel. And so one of the first things you got to do is take away all access to real medicine, which is to say real nutrition, because that's medicine. There isn't any other medicine out there. The chemicals are not medicine. Medicine is 100% what you can do that will actually naturally create a stronger immune system.
Yeah, the whole idea of the impugning of the immune system is one little thing we're given. Where somehow this doesn't work, but it does work if let to develop. And of course, last week's talk about vaccination, talk about how that's, you know, disrupted or interfered with, particularly with, you know, with infants. But even the whole idea, you know, the assault on traditional motherhood, how that would affect how children are raised and even how they're fed, because they're denied their mother's breast milk, which is very important for the development of a child's immunity and overall health. But then they're pushing bottle feeding, you know, which was huge. My mom did that, which is everyone was doing it.
Yeah.
You know, it's just one of those things. I hear reports that even today, the British royal family today uses homeopathy instead of the Rockefellers. So they didn't use their own type of medicine, which they promoted.
Of course.
You know.
Of course, they wouldn't get near any of these chemicals. So that this is for the slave class. And so the whole battle over, like, you know, access to, you know, like these poor idiots that, like, get up there and say, you know, like, I'm from a poor community and, like, half our people are, you know, without health insurance. Believe me, They are better off because they have no health insurance. Trust me, they are better.
Well, just stop using your SNAP cards to buy
And then
Cheetos.
that's the thing. Exactly. So then they have to look at the SNAP card and also, sad to say, the drug use. Right? The whole toxic lifestyle. I mean, God, I was talking with this. I had an interview like a week ago. Won't mention her name, but she was a black lady, and we were talking about like the food in the inner city. And I mean, this is just a really good example of like she was saying that, like for like 5 square miles, there was nothing but chemical corn chips, alcohol, and processed food,
Fast food, that's something.
fast food, and that's all that's available.
Well, the fast food is there to launder the drug money
Well,
that's
exactly right. Yeah, I mean,
Yeah.
it is just that these humans are being subjected to basically a 100% malevolent assault using all of these clever methods of poisoning,
Well, that's why in
basically.
America, the poorer you are, the more obese you are.
Well, yeah, exactly right. And it's, they give them the SNAP cards. They go to Walmart. I don't know if you've ever seen like, what those people, what the people buy with that stuff. But I mean, it's like you can tell what people buy. I saw this survey once. It was very enlightening. By the companies who were supporting the SNAP card and like lobbying for it. And top on the list, Coca-Cola. Coca-Cola. And then it was like, you just go right down the every single malevolent food imaginable was supporting it because that's what the people are eat with the stuff. That's what they have access to. So, it this is I think to for, my opinion, Tim, is the best thing that we can promote, I would like to promote, is just the idea that you just have to, the system is a whirling cesspool. There's no reforming it. It really, it's just impossible to reform.
Well, I think it's all there for harvesting and ultimately wealth extraction, whether it's through increasing
Exactly.
premiums, even whatever you save to your life by the time you hit 50 or 60s because of your lifestyle, your health starts to fail, then they start getting you there with what you pay for in medical treatment,
Yeah, and
right?
I mean, and they'll take any, it's see, it's like, yeah, I mean, the majority of healthcare in the United States, of actual of just like units of healthcare delivered, is in the emergency rooms, right? The emergency room is actually the healthcare provider for the poor people. No one is turned away. They'll get access to healthcare. Well, who funds the emergency rooms? Right. I mean, it's a fiat currency fantasy. This is all part of the deficit spending because basically it all ends up in the state budgets, which are, like in California, just trillions of dollars of like, they can't, I mean, our Illinois, I mean, so it's, these are just economic fantasies that exist because the fiat currency is taken seriously. And because of that, the state can go out and borrow more money or create bonds or something. And even though it cannot ever with taxation or in a real economic structure, pay for the cost of the emergency rooms, they continue to exist. And this is like, where what like poor people use for their system. So it is of course socialized, right? And it's, they don't pay for it. You don't pay for emergency room visits if you're a poor person. You just, get whatever you get and you go away. It's not a real medical system. And the expertise that is really needed in the ERs is triage for bullet wounds, right? Well, I mean, to me, this is not really a me I mean, I know it's a medical problem, but I don't think that better triage is the solution to the problem. The problem is to create a structure of society where we don't have to shoot each other all the time to steal our corn chips and
Well,
heroin.
yeah, I mean, obviously, if you had a, I mean, if you had back in early 60s, more than 3 out of 4, black children were born in intact families. Now it's less than 20, or close to, 80% are born out of wedlock, and then with that comes a whole host of pathological, behavior and problems. One of which is, gunshot victims, like in Chicago, south side of Chicago, and these things. And of course, that type of degeneration or you know, moral decay was, you know, wasn't accidental. It was promoted, you know, by the same parties that created the modern medical system.
Yeah.
Not to say there's a direct connection, but I'm saying it's one of these things where, yeah, that no one's addressing the overall health, and obviously, you know, if you want to promote health, you also want to promote intact families, because children are healthy in intact families. But that, again, that's being judgmental.
Right. Well, I mean, you can't do that. So, you know, it's just, you know, there's no way to, the system can't be reformed.
Well, there's it's big business, and there's a, you know, now within the system, there are doctors, medical doctors, who acknowledge this. And then they have to, they're either pushed out or they defect and admit this. And there's, you know, Dr. Jennifer Daniels, there's Dr. Nancy Banks. I interviewed her, both of them. Both of them black female women, by the way, which is interesting. Both brilliant. And so it's, you know, a certain, maybe a willingness to look at, be skeptical of the system goes with, you know, with being black for many reasons. So maybe that's part of it. But they're, but they got in trouble because their patients were getting better. Because the more they deviated from standard care, their patients got better, and they spoke up about it. So that tells you the malevolence of the system, because you're not using the drugs. That's where the money is. But another one is Dr. Barbara Starfield, who I think in the year 2000, she found that there were 225 iatrogenic deaths. How do you pronounce it? Iatrogenic? Yeah, iatrogenic. Allopathic doctor-caused deaths in the U.S. every year. This is only counting direct deaths, but when you factor in indirect deaths, Dr. Gary Knoll in 2011 reported in his Death by Medicine, the figure is closer to 784,000 per year. That's 7.8 million deaths every decade.
I hate to laugh, but I mean, what can you do but laugh, you know? This is what people are desperate. This is the system people are desperate to get into.
Yeah, as he says, he concludes, it is evident that the American medical system is the leading cause of death and injury in the United States. But, you know, would you rather have it delivered in a private healthcare system or a socialized healthcare system?
Oh, man, I mean, it's just, you know.
Well, that's one of these things. Again, it just, you step back, you start to, outside the system, like, what's going on here? None of this makes sense, you know.
It just doesn't make any sense.
Does it really make sense to apply a 90-year-old patient with a dozen drugs?
Yeah,
you know, because they're running the tab up.
Tim, if you don't mind, I wanted to give an example, just kind of like a personal testimony, because it really bothered me, and I just want to take this moment to express. It was a good friend of mine, and he had cancer, and he lived with us, and then the cancer comes back. He'd had chemo and radiation. And I was saying to him, I go, look, you know, let's give alternative medicine a shot. You know, but go down to Mexico. They got clinics down there. Let's give it a shot. He was still, you know, he wasn't dead weight. He was sick because he had lymphoma and it had come back and he was ill. But I said, you know, I've talked to these guys. I don't think it's like a sure bet here, but it's like, let's give it a shot. He went and talked to the doctor, right? And the doctor said, no, I think that's a bad idea. I'd like to offer you hospice.
Mm.
That's right. Because it's really, you want to make yourself comfortable. Now, hospice is, it's like that, your ingenious, recounting of the guy who told McCarthy that, you know, there's a conspiracy because if there wasn't, then occasionally we'd get a break and it would go our way. Well, hospice is 100% death sentence. If you go into hospice, mm-hmm. California, now this is incredible because, you know, from time to time, people actually recover who are really sick.
Yeah.
Right? But no, not in hospice. In hospice, you always die. Now, here's how it happens. You get heroin or synthetic, right? Now the thing is, they keep you comfortable by giving you heroin. But you get uncomfortable because, you know, you can't breathe that well on heroin, mm-hmm. right? So the solution for that is, well, more heroin so that you're not in any pain. So then basically you just, you basically suffocate. And, it might take at the most like 2 weeks if you're really virile when you go in. But so that's the American medical system. At the end, they just suffocate you with heroin, and then, you know, it's on to the next patient. Man, I wish I could, like, you know, be like a little sunnier about it, but I really, really dislike it, Tim. I think that and then blaming the problems we have on socialized medicine, or because there isn't access to, like, you know, free enterprise Rockefeller doctors, right? You know, we need, if only we had, like, if only if the system was free enterprise, it would just work like a charm, you know, because everyone could take all the statin drugs they want. See, this is just sophistry. It's just they're keeping us inside this with the dialectic, in a, we are just thought puppets in a system that is basically a murder machine.
Well, it claims, you know, 15 cents out of every dollar supposedly produced in the United States is healthcare related expense. So you can look at it in many different ways, but obviously with that much money, that percentage of the nation's resources going, you're going to have an interest created there. And they're not going to want to see that number drop, you know, for whatever. So it's not really, if you know, no, it's not like this is a number that's responding to a reality. They're going to create, if you're in a position to market and provide drugs that are going to continue delivering customers, you're going to do that. I mean, it's a business model.
Tim, you go to these hospitals. I just, as you know, I spent like a couple weeks and it's a really fancy, good hospital. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I think, you know, honestly, like the nurses and even some of the physicians, God bless them. I mean, these guys are trying their absolute best. They're as much enslaved by the Rockefeller system as anybody else. You know, they don't. But the thing that I really, really just was horrifying was how many drug company representatives there were.
Yeah.
And they are everywhere inside the hospital. And you can always tell them because they got the little kit, you know. And then they're not dressed like doctors. They're dressed nice and they have fancy clothes on and they got this little kit and it contains all the new fancy drugs and also all of like the first class tickets to, you know,
Bermuda
and stuff like that. And these guys are everywhere. They're just like a parasite on top of these things. They're just everywhere. And so they control I mean, there's no question in terms of the power, like, you know, how it works. They're in charge of the thing, you know. And it's just, so if you go into those hospitals, you're just going to get whatever drug they're going to try to sell. And I'll tell you, though, stay out of those damn hospitals. You know, this hospital has had a number of cases of, like, the flesh-eating, you know,
yes.
bacteria,
yeah.
fungus. And they're very freaked out about it because they had, I'm not positive, you know, but I'm pretty sure I know they've had a number of fatalities of, like, patients who've come in healthy and just within a few days their brain was gone. But I think they've had some employees come down. And so when you walk around, there is like these powerful antibacterial soap stations every 20 feet.
Yeah, yeah.
They're everywhere, you know, and like everyone is, like, you know, washing their hands with this stuff. And then after a couple of days, you notice that your skin is starting to molt off of your hands, you know?
Yeah, because it kills the good bacteria, yeah.
Kills everything, you know? And so it's just like, so it just, this isn't, we're staring at the wrong problem when we contemplate free enterprise versus socialized medicine at this point. This system is so... it has so much malevolence in it that it's not possible to reform it. You cannot, in good conscience, offer it to anyone. The idea of offering the Rockefeller medicine system to the poor people after you've killed them made them sick with all of the toxic stuff, that would just be another level of toxicity to make them even more ill before you gave them the hospice program, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, you just have to. I, you know, it's just like anything else in our world, Tim. We have to organize among ourselves. You know, I haven't been to, you know, like a U.S. Rockefeller doctor in over 10 years. The one drug I would take under some circumstance would be like tetracycline, you know, some of the...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, obviously there's some circumstances where you want antibiotics or something good. Obviously, they've overused them. That's why you have this resistant strains now of these.
But I'd use, there's a couple, but only after I'd studied it. And I wouldn't trust anything a doctor said. I would not even, I wouldn't want to have a doctor near me when I was doing the decision because it would just confuse me. You know?
Well, I mean, consider doctors. Consider, we talked about the American Medical Association and how it controls, well, all the medical schools. And it restricts how many people can be accepted in a given year. So there's just, they create a shortage of doctors. So doctors command higher salaries and these things. There's all types of cartelization involved in that. But if you look at the medical school itself, the abuse of residents, right? The 16-hour shifts and these things, the sort of trauma-based, you know, instruction. And
trauma-based education control.
Yeah. And, well, what's that do? It's obviously what it does. It makes it so people who are studying this stuff, and let's face it, people who go into medicine, I think, are the higher end when it comes to intellect and thinking and talent in many ways. But how do you control them? Well, you control them through this trauma-based education system where they're so exhausted and they're just trying to, you know, get, you know, 4 years of medical school, then 3 years of residency, and you exhaust them to the point where their critical faculties are either worn down or exhausted, and they're learned just to take orders, take instructions, and then practice the medicine based on these instructions. So there's very little room when you're going through all that to critically think about actually what you're doing, because you're trying to keep up with all the instructions you're given, not to mention the grueling hours that they give you. Because they can.
You're dead broke when you get out of medical school. They're usually, I mean, unless they have rich parents, they're like at least a couple hundred grand in debt.
That's another function of running the practice. No one can run a practice anymore because they're all in debt. So they got to work
And so what they have to, well, then they got to play ball with the chemical companies.
Well,
right?
That's when they can make, you're in debt, you got a practice to run.
Yeah.
If you can see, you know, four times more patients dishing out, peddling, you know, snake oil at the pharmaceutical companies.
Well, it's like vaccines. I mean, yeah. Like, if you get a completed vaccine schedule on a kid, they give you like a few $100 bonus.
Yeah.
So who cares if the kid's autistic? I mean, you need the money because you got the student debt to pay off.
Yeah, so it's not based on any, it's mass, well, first of all, it's mass drugging, which is wrong.
Yeah, the Hippocratic Oath is as broken as like, you know, Obamacare. It's just a complete joke at this point. People have to fend for themselves, man. I mean, you have to, like, you know, I mean, there's probably people who are listening to us who are like facing serious illnesses, and I can't obviously, you know, represent myself as like, you know, a doctor, but I can certainly tell you my commonsensical approach, which is just get the hell out of the medical system and start doing your own research.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what you got to do. And I mean, all, you know, it's sort of like the internet is weird in that, you know, anybody can show up, make claims, they go, well, you know, the internet is like, how can you take it seriously, because there could be bad information, you know, and these are people who are like, you know, who buy the AMA, you know, fantasy story, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so they're getting 100% propaganda and poison, and then they're upset because people are trying to find the truth, even though the, you know, the area they're looking in may not be, you know, completely, there can be charlatans in there, right? Well, the thing that polices the internet and the alt media is just human intelligence.
Yeah.
And that's what you have to do. You can't look for something in the internet as a tribunal to like be set up to determine who's telling the truth, who isn't. No, not going to happen. Everyone, you have to assume everyone is like, you know, like is suspicious of not giving you the best information. You've got to have your own, you know, wits about you. And then just trust your intellect and develop, you know, higher and higher level skills of trying to deal with it. Problems like your health, you know. I have family relatives and stuff. They have peanut allergies and they're all related to the toxicity.
Yeah.
In their diet, and none of them are trying to deal with that. They're all looking for a chemical cure.
Yeah, I mean, is it the glyphosate that's destroying your gut biome? Is it the heavy metals that's been injected in your muscle since you're a kid that's causing health problems? Or, you know, maybe this is what's causing the health problems? And the answer isn't to go back to the same people that poisoned you?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, you're 400 pounds and you're diabetic and you have a peanut allergy and you're, you know, you, and then you're, so the solution is a chemical? Right. Look at your damn diet. Look at your exercise schedule. You know, these are the things that you have to, you know, this is the medical system we need to turn to. The whole idea about the American, you know, like whether or not we're having, you know, this problem that they bring up with socialized medicine. These the guys who bring this dialectic up, I think, just There are some that are just complete morons who actually buy into it, but I think most of them are just like Dr. Hotez. You know, they're just as evil as rattlesnakes. And they're
I was reading an article about socialized medicine that was making the point about shortages and these things and how you have a right to health care, like in Canada. But in all of Canada, there's 15 CAT scan machines, whereas 2,000 in the United States. So the waiting lines are long, these things. But all this presumes that some of this modern medicine scanning and stuff is good for you, that we need it, you know. And I understand their point, given that context, you're right. I mean, the modern machinery we associate with, diagnostic and scanning, there's much more readily available in the United States, which has a, quote, freer healthcare system. So people come down from Canada to escape from their socialized system to deal with the shortages. So the shortages are externalized, externalized. So these things, but that doesn't address the nature of healthcare, how modern medicine is malevolent. And it was,
right. I mean, they want to come like, we have more like MRI machines so we can detect cancer caused by the toxic food. So then we can get you right on the chemotherapy and the radiation treatments, you know? Those Canadians are suffering, aren't they? Yeah, this is terrible.
Early detection in these things, yeah.
I was reading that they're having to redesign the MRI machine so they can fit the Americans inside them.
That is a great metaphor for like modern medicine dilemma right there, right?
There's getting more and more patients that have over 54-inch girth. It's like if you go on the American plane flat now and they have those extra buckles that they give people, you know, it's like they can't even get them in the seats.
Yeah, humans are not supposed to be that fat.
Yeah, well, and like, you know, 100 years ago, they weren't. But now these poor bastards, you know, they've been poisoned, then they don't know it, and they look to the same people that poison them, and then they have arguments over like, well, you know, it's like, God, I'm so happy to be weighing 500 pounds here in America because they've got a gigantic MRI machine and I can fit into it, you know?
They call it Jumbo or something, I don't know.
Get into Jumbo. and I only have like 5 cancer tumors, but not to worry because I'm going to have like I'm going to have access to all the chemotherapy I need. And if it doesn't work, I've got hospice and it's all set to go. I'm just as happy as a clam. Yeah. It's just the whole, it baffles me. How fooled, you know, the public has been.
Well, we talked last week about vaccinations, right? How people forget in living memory, how people didn't go bonkers over measles or chickenpox. Or mumps for that matter. Just these diseases that you got and you persevered and you're better for it. Now, you know, when there's that quote outbreak, when a few dozen people get measles, it's in the news, you know.
Yeah, they're going, I mean, this is the brave new world, and this, the vaccines are the ethnic-specific bioweapon that the PNAC, you know, made fun of back in 1999 before they, you know, executed, 911.
Here's an anecdote here. I had a brother who was going to the doctor, you know, checkup, and every time he went to the doctor, he had high blood pressure. So the doctor immediately wanted to prescribe blood pressure medicine for him. He's in his 30s. Okay, 30s. You're always a high blood pressure. Well, it turns out, he said, no, let me hold off on a little while. So I don't want to take drugs. He was skeptical. And it turns out what happened, every time he went to the doctor, he got nervous.
Well, yeah, of course, because he's afraid the doctor will give him medicine.
Medicine will kill him. And he's right. And it's just your body telling you that, you know, that you're threatened. The whole point is that, you know, they would have put him on drugs to deal with the fact that he just something he didn't have, unless he only felt nervous when he went to the doctor. You know, I had an uncle who had heart surgery, and then they had, you know, after he had heart surgery, he wanted to give him all these blood thinning medicine. He was all weak, he was collapsing because of the blood thinners, and his wife, my aunt, finally decided, let's not take the drugs, I'm just gonna look at your diet, I'm gonna monitor your diet. So he had the benefit, of spouse maintenance, so, you know, a loving wife taking care of him and monitoring what he's eating, and it all regularized naturally without drugs.
Of course.
And he lived another 40 years. You know, so, you know, if he had kept on the drugs, he probably would have lived only another 10 years or something, you know. So.
Tim, this is how upside down it is.
Yeah.
It's the only way you can get better.
Mm-hmm.
You think they're going to, with the surgeries and the radiation and the drugs, and all, is that going to make you better? Really? This is going to get you healthy?
You don't believe preventative chemotherapy?
Preventative chemotherapy. It's just completely looted.
How about the one where they got the cancer gene, where they start lopping off your breast or a body part because you have a genetic predisposition to cancer?
Yeah, Angelina Jolie did that. And, I mean, I thought that was just an obvious... See, this is the Brave New World, Brave New World, you know, like Lifetime actors that are helping us to have the very worst possible behavior to get into the slave camp faster. And so when you have celebrities, you know, like taking self-destructive medical procedures, right? This is a social cue. And so, but it's just preposterous.
We're drug users. Sometimes I think they're faking it. Like, almost like, do you really think like characters like Keith Richards and Mick Jagger really used drugs as much as they said they did?
They've been dead 50 years ago.
Exactly. So it was an image, right?
I mean, look, there's a great, Keith Richards did a documentary. I forget what it's called. Anyway, they go into his home. I mean, there are Masonic symbols, skull and bones, the all seeing everywhere. The guy is a 100% bought and paid for Lifetime actor who can play guitar. The Rolling Stones were funded by London School of Economics when it was completely under control of the Rothschilds, right? I think that the Symphony for the Devil is actually homage to the original funding source for the band. And they have these ideas, they put forward the ideas that, like, Keith Richard is a profound, you know, drug addict and stuff. Yeah, and he's like 80 years old and he's still alive. So I don't think so. My mom is at a retirement home, and I get to see, you know, several hundred people in their 80s, and nobody is a smoker. No one, right? I just think that's all that the... You know, the life, the images that they give us are just, it's, you know, they talk about eye candy. This is eye garbage.
Yeah.
It's just there to give the idea that these hip people do debase activities. And so we should do them as well. It's the rock idol, you know, from Elvis Presley through, you know, whoever is the current lineup, you know, it's just all, they're all there and being promoted to destroy us. And medicine is just part of that, you know? I mean, that's the bottom line.
Yeah, the degenerate rock idol, a character like Freddie Mercury, died at the, you know, tender old age of 45. His lifestyle caught up with him, and I think what killed him was the AZT and the fact that he wasn't willing to, you know, discipline himself. But the whole point is that it was the cumulative effect of his lifestyle that killed him, and then the AZT was the coup de grace. You know.
Yeah, he was the patron saint of AIDS. I watched a documentary. There's two documentaries, or one's actually, I think, a movie, and the other's like a documentary. He's a big star now for the counterculture because he is, was a homosexual and died of AIDS and had a falsetto voice, you know. And they actually have this heroic thing where he gives his last concert while he's dying of AIDS, and he does a terrific job, and everyone is crying, and it's just this wonderful moment. And then he dies shortly after that. It's all nonsense. If the AIDS virus was real, if this was a problem, it would have gotten into the heterosexual community 20, 30 years ago.
Yeah.
So it was lifestyle, and he's not some kind of counterculture hero. He was a degenerate.
Yeah, and he burned himself out. You know.
Exactly, with toxic lifestyle, and then he was used by the culture destroyers.
Well, a sane world would treat his life like a cautionary tale, not something to celebrate. For Pete's sake, come on.
All of these people, and so you know, the music industry is just, you know, we'll have to talk about that in another, you know. But it's just, it's the same thing. It's just like that's why when you. You know, when you get to medicine, you should have the skepticism to think, you know, better really do a lot of my own research in this. Oh, you know, I was going to say, like, this friend of mine, he had hepatitis, which was under control. There was no problem, but they wanted to give him a whiz bang new drug. They did, and it was a bone marrow because that's where the Hep C, they got to get in it. And then, like 6 months later, it came down with, I think it's maybe multiple myeloma. It's very rare, you know, bone marrow cancer. And like particularly at his age, it was just unheard of. But so it clearly was related to the drugs they gave. They said, well, we're going to give you stem cell, this new whiz bang stem cell thing. The procedure was a total disaster. He lost his immune system. He was in a coma for like a week. And then he was in a bubble room for like another month after that. You could come and see him with like your space suits on and stuff. Poor guy. But the thing that was amazing is that before he went in for the stem cell, I talked to him and I said, look, they say that you're early, they've caught you early. It's not even at stage 1 out of 5 yet. Why don't you go to like a clinic that will try to use some nutritional techniques? Some of these clinics have had really good results. Give it a shot, and then just see what the result is. Just try it. You've got time. It only takes a month. He's very wealthy. I said you can go there. Take 20 grand. Give it a shot. And he goes, no, I'm gonna let the professionals at MD Anderson, that was a hospital in Houston, he was gonna, have his medical procedure done at. I'm gonna use these guys, because they're professional. He says, but there's one thing that bothers me. I go, what's that? He goes, well, here, let me show you. They have a list of things that they want their patients to do like before. Nothing with like nutrition, but one of them was don't look at the internet. Don't, and they actually were very specific. Don't look. I'm not kidding. This was absolutely. They go, don't. We don't want you like spending any time because that'll, give you like maybe some bad ideas about what's going on. Don't look at the internet. So this is your, really, you've got. I think there's really a triad. I mean, right now you got socialized medicine, free enterprise medicine, and these are both actually just, different ways of calling the Rockefeller medicine, different levels of access to it, but it's all just ends up in a big chemical clump. And then you have the alt media medicine. And the alt media medicine is just whatever your brain can actually do in terms of research to figure out how in the hell to get yourself healthier, But I'll tell you one thing, it's going to start with a little bit of discipline. It's going to start with a little bit of like maybe stop eating so much chemical food. Stop. That's how you're going to get there. And this is the only way. You don't want to have cancer. Okay, make the project now. Not when you have like a tumor. Look at what you can do now to like basically be healthier. So this is, finally there's an alternative to the two systems of destruction, and it's the alt media. It's crackpots like me and you can like get bad advice from, and we can't give advice. We're not doctors, but I can just tell you flat out that there is analytic approaches that you can take that are different than just going in, showing up, and then shoving the chemicals down your mouth.
And if you want to, question the professionals are the one that told people they had AIDS from HIV and they killed them with AZT.
Professionals are giving you
In
vaccines.
fact, professionals are the ones that are,
What's it, three-minute-old children?
Hep B in infants. These are the professionals. These are the professionals that's saying they're trying to want to give Gardasil to boys, much less women, girls, boys.
Yeah, boys at 3 minutes.
So
Yeah, because they
that's
want to
cute.
inflame the brain. It's just, it's all this satanic, kind of control over society where they want to inflame the kid's brain in the first 5 minutes because they know that it'll be more stupid later on and be easier to control, It's just rotten. Thing is, system is just rotten. And so you got to defend yourself with your own, with your wits,
Okay, Joe, I think we covered
Well, I'm just off to my doctor's appointment.
it.
Just can't wait to, I need more drugs. No drugs for me, Tim. Just more powers and principalities. And I'll see you next week.
Okay, enjoy the weekend.
Thank you. You too, buddy. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.